and welcome to the Pioneers in Learning podcast by InSpirit, where we host experts from around the globe and learn about their trials and tribulations when bringing their innovations to the education sector. My name is Amrita, and I'm honored to have Carl Boll, a PhD researcher on learning and virtual reality, on our show today. Carl was a teacher for 15 years before doing his PhD, is currently investigating the benefits and constraints of virtual reality in educational settings, and recently launched a VR game teaching children how to ride a bicycle in traffic. Thank you so much for spending your time with me today, Carl.
No problem. With pleasure.
So could you start by telling us a little bit about your time as a teacher and what pushed you to start your PhD in the instructional design of VR learning environments?
All right. So I started as a teacher in secondary education. So that's K-12 high school for you. And actually, I am a language teacher. So I'm a teacher in Dutch, which is my mother tongue. But I was always interested in implementing technology into the learning to enhance the learning by the pupils. So I investigated and experimented with a lot of tools, and I also gave a lot of workshops and presentations, sharing my insights with, I think, over 1,000 of other teachers right now. And in 2012, the Oculus DK1 released, later on Samsung Gear, and especially when the Cardboard came out, I was immediately intrigued by this new technology. And I started to experiment and to investigate how it worked. And then I got an opportunity to start as a researcher on training in VR. And 1 year later, I started my PhD in the instructional design.
Fascinating. So what subjects do you focus on when looking at training in VR?
What do you mean by subjects?
What areas of instruction? So do you focus on language or do you focus on other areas as well?
Well, I have no particular subject, but for me, the evidence-based instructional design of the learning and experience itself is my focus. So I really focus on how to design a powerful and effective learning experience. And it can be in several subjects, several environments.
And this is an area that I don't think has had a lot of work gone into yet. I think people are still trying to understand how to design good VR experiences, be it for gaming or for education. Mm-hmm. So what are some of the fundamental instructional design strategies that you believe should be incorporated in virtual reality environments?
Well, it's true because there hasn't been a lot of research yet. I did a review study on the empirical use of VR, and I found that only a few people think about how to design it properly. It's all about experimenting without really falling back to the principles we already know, and that's kind of a pity, because that's that we have, for example, VR learning experiences which are not effective. The outcomes are not effective, and then they say, well, VR does not work. But you shouldn't blame the technology, you should blame the people who use the technology in an improper way. So I wanted to quote some researchers in a recent study, Makansky, Turkilson, and Mayer, a study from 2019, and they said, it's not appropriate to take a technology-centered approach and expect that the adaptation of learning material to immersive VR will automatically lead to better learning outcomes. And I think that's the big problem. People just transfer old principles to new technology, and that doesn't work. The VR technology is something new, and it has some unique affordances, and you should design them in a proper way. We should also fall back to some principles we already know. For example, I always refer to the multimedia learning principles by Clark and Mayer. For example, the multimedia principle, which says that you should always combine text with image, but also VR is a really overwhelming and very rich environment. And when you look at how users react to this virtual learning environment, they are overwhelmed and they look awe, and they just look everywhere, especially at the things that are not important. And we should guide them. So the VR learning environment is typically an environment which is too rich and which leads to what we call cognitive overload. So they get too much stimuli, and they forget about what it's about and what they should focus on. Now, there are some good advices. For example, it's better to use audio instructions over written instructions, because you already have a lot of images, and if you add text to it, then the visual processor in our brain becomes overloaded. And that's not wise, because we also have an auditive processor in our brains. And if you give instructions through audio, then the auditive processor will start working. And then there's not an overload on the visual processor. So that's one principle which should be used more, and which is not yet used structurally. And of course, I know why, because it takes more time. It's way easier for a developer to design some pop-up screens with text and then explaining the instructions. But you should actually use audio instructions over those pop-up screens. Another one is, for example, the coherence principle. Especially in VR, it's important. Especially when it's about learning. I'm not talking about entertainment or gaming, but about learning. You should only show what really is important, and you should leave out all the rest. That has to do with the affordance theory. Affordances are when people see a chair, for example, they know what it's designed for. It's to sit on it. A door is to open it. And in VR, they will do the same thing. So if they see on a desk, they see a glass of water, they tend to grab it. And if they can't grab it, they are confused. And that's something we should avoid. So when designing learning principles, you should only provide with materials in this learning environment which are really necessary. But of course, then VR developers will say, well, you downgrade the power of VR, and maybe it is, but it's not about VR, it's about learning. And we should focus on the learning goal, and VR is only a technology, a means which leads us to this learning goal. Also, personalization principle, adding a friendly and natural voice over a computer-generated voice. What also is very important is we should always provide with the users with a familiarization level. So before the user or the learner starts interacting with the learning materials, he should or she should you should know how the controls work in such a way that it becomes automatic, because we don't want users or learners to think about which control they should press when interacting with the learning materials. They should be working with the learning materials itself and not with not with thinking about the controls. Another important principle is what they call the signaling principle. We should lead the users and the learners. And there are two ways to do it. It's guidance and cueing. We should provide with the users with some visual cues, for example, highlighting, or for example, haptics, which help to understand which materials to interact with, or for example, where to go to, because it's, as I said before, it's a really rich environment and you can do the most awesome things with it, but it becomes too overwhelming and people will start using their working memory for thinking about what they should do instead of using it to learn with the learning materials. And of course, you always have to apply sound learning principles such as the activation of the prior knowledge, scaffolding, which means that you should provide the learner in the first levels with a lot of guidance and support and explaining to him what he should do, why they did it, what they learned about it. But later on, this support and this guidance should be withdrawn gradually, of course, but it should be withdrawn because when a learner becomes more experienced, he should be able to do the activities with less help. This is especially important because otherwise you get what they call an expertise reversal effect. When experts have too much support, they will get irritated and annoyed, and then they will learn less. So it's important to apply that principle. Of course, giving feedback is important, and also trigger reflective thinking. There should always be a kind of metacognitive thinking or feedback, which tells the learners what they have done and what they learned about it, because otherwise they will not take it with them. They just did something, but they didn't know why. So that's important. And when I talk about feedback, I also need feedback from the system, which means that the system should always give feedback whether an action is registered correctly, because otherwise users will interact with the materials, and if nothing happens, they will become confused about, okay, did I do something wrong? And then, again, this is a cognitive capacity which is lost.
Awesome. Thank you so much for sharing your knowledge from your research. I'm sure that this is really, really important for developers that are creating these VR experiences for learning environments to actually think about mm-hmm. when designing things. I especially liked the piece that you talked about where you talked about cognitive overload in that when students go into a VR system or a simulation experience, sometimes they experience so much that they actually come out learning nothing. because there was too much in there. And that's something that we've faced while testing with our students as well. And I think that that's a big reason why a lot of teachers hesitate to bring virtual reality into the classroom. So on that note, how do you believe that virtual reality can actually improve learning? And do you have any tips for how it should be integrated into a classroom environment or an at-home learning environment?
Well, the first thing is thinking about whether VR is the right choice. I think you should only use VR when, for example, you have a dangerous situation, or whether it's when it's otherwise impossible, or when VR can enhance their understanding by visualizing abstract things like chemistry or the inside of your body, because that's otherwise impossible. And that's something which virtual reality can do, which is especially the right choice to apply VR. Also, what I think is great is VR can create real world problems, and this is something we know from Merrill's first principles, that we should confront the learners with real world problems, with authentic problems, and they should interact with and try to figure out how to work with it. And it is something which VR can do, because sometimes it's hard to do it in real life. It's impossible, or it's expensive, or it's unethical, or it's organizational a nightmare. So this is something which VR can provide for. What's also great about VR is that you have no limits. You have unlimited resources. For example, in a chemical laboratory, you have unlimited chemical elements. You can pause experiments, you can forward them, you can rewind them, you can combine elements which you shouldn't be combining in real life, and nothing happens. You have no loss of materials. For example, in welding, in real life, a lot of material is lost during practice. But in VR, it isn't. And also, VR can provide you with machinery which is otherwise too expensive to provide for schools, or when there's limited machinery, there's only room for 10 machines, for example, and you have 20 students, but in VR there are no limits. I think that's the great opportunities. Also, when it's when there are rare events, for example, in medicine, it can take a life before you end up as a complete expert, because some events only happen once in 20 or 30 years. So you can combine it, and you can put them in an order which speeds up the attainment of your expertise level. It's a safe environment. Also for soft skills, for example, where you have conversational skills, and a lot of students feel uncomfortable with all these role-playing games, which are often also really bad learning experiences. But in VR, it's possible. You have a conversational partner, and you can practice as long as you want, and you shouldn't be ashamed afterwards because you said something stupid, for example. So these are all benefits of virtual reality, which are otherwise, I think there's no learning technology which can provide for these opportunities. And that's one of the those are the unique affordances of virtual reality.
Thank you. And you spoke about a lot of different areas where VR could be used, and some where it enhances student knowledge, some where students get to do things that are impossible, or where they get to put themselves in the shoes of someone else. Mm-hmm. Are there some areas of learning that you think could benefit more from using VR instruction than others as schools think about budgets and developers think about where they should spend their time and energy when creating these learning experiences?
Mm-hmm. Well, it all has to do with when it's too dangerous, when it's too when it's impossible, when it could be about ethical issues. Those are the subjects, those are the domains which are the best opportunities for VR. When it's not about one of those elements, you really should think about implementing VR, because VR costs a lot of money. And if you only want to provide learners with some information, for example, then VR is not the way to go. Then there are other possibilities. VR is about active interaction with the learning materials in dangerous situations, in situations where otherwise it's expensive or difficult in organization, when there are ethical issues, when it's rare. Those are the issues you should focus on.
I love that. And I know that you have a little bit experience with VR development yourself. Mm-hmm. So on that note, could you tell us a little bit about your company, Virtual Learning is Reality?
Well, Virtual Learning is Reality is a consultancy agency which helps enterprises with the who want to implement VR in their training and learning department, and we guide them through the whole process of first of all the idea, and then scoping the idea to make it affordable, to make it feasible. Then we design the user stories. We think about which technology should be the best choice, 360 or 3D animation, mixed reality, augmented reality. And then we design the scenarios. We think about testing, the designing itself. We test it over and over with users, but also we guide them through the design process based on our expertise in these evidence-based designing principles. We end up with something with learning experiences which add value to their company. We start with the problem and with detecting what the problem really is. We ask an expert to perform and so we can detect which are the difficult areas, and then we can also do a context analysis in which we try to figure out what the company has as resources itself. And then, through the design process, we constantly evaluate based on our evidence-based principles. And we think also about KPIs and business case development. So actually the whole process from problem to solution, business case, the whole track.
Yeah, and I'd love to give our listeners maybe a more tangible project that you worked on. So I wanted to ask you how you went about creating your game VRKeer, which mm-hmm. teaches children how to ride a bicycle safely in traffic.
Yes, well, VRKeer is actually a pun because verkeer in Dutch is traffic. So it's kind of a pun referring to the traffic, which is the problem because we see that a lot of children have problems with riding a bicycle safely in traffic. And we designed this learning experience for children between 10 and 14 because they are the most vulnerable target. We first asked children what they found difficult or dangerous situations they encountered before. And we also asked them what they wanted to be integrated into the learning experience. So we also made some mood boards, and they also could tell what they wanted for the design. We also asked the teachers what they wanted to get out of this learning experience. For example, they wanted a learning dashboard where they could follow the progress of the students. They wanted a kind of a management system in which they could start a student at a certain level. Then we worked together, and I think that's also one of the reasons why why VRKeer has become so popular, because we designed it in the view of TPEC. Maybe you know what TPEC is about. It's about bringing expertise from different angles. You should have the technology perspective, the developers, of course. Then you should have the content experts. So we asked mobility organizations to help us and to make sure that everything is correct. And then we had also some instructional experts, for example, myself. But we also worked with the teachers and students themselves. And we brought all this expertise together, and I think that's really important because otherwise you cannot end up with a successful learning experience. Then we started developing, of course. We wrote scenarios, user stories, and we had multiple user testings, always building upon the prior ones, adapting according to what the students and teachers said themselves. And of course, we based our development on the state of the art from scientific literature and from what we know from design principles, for example, from the XR Association. It's in bringing all these expertise together, which makes you end up with a successful learning experience. Especially because we addressed a real world problem, and I think that's also important. As I said before, you should think about when integrating VR, and it's about this is a perfect example because you cannot go with students. Sometimes teachers go with students into traffic with a group of 20 but that's really an organizational nightmare, and you do not get a clear insight of the individual's competences. So by creating this VR learning experience, we could provide teachers with powerful learning analytics, and they really understand better what each student could do.
I love that. And I love that you focused on how important user testing is, because I do think that that's what makes a good VR experience. And on that note, I do want to apologize for completely butchering the name. I tried my best.
No problem at all. Experienced it before.
Is there anything else that you would like to share with our listeners?
Well, I'm going to repeat myself, but I think it's really important. It's important to understand that media will never influence learning. It's not my quote, it's a quote from Clark, and we know it since 1994. I still believe that a lot of developers and companies have not yet understood the real meaning of it. Some people think VR is like magic, and it's a pity, because it can be a danger for VR itself, because when you have too high expectations about something and you cannot cope with these expectations, then you end up in the disillusion. And we already had that in the late 90s, and it should really be a pity, because right now we have all the ideal circumstances to make virtual learning, virtual reality learning, a great success. And I think we should be cautious, and we should think thoroughly about when applying VR, and we should apply it in the proper way. And this means you should foster the unique affordances of VR technology, such as the visualization of abstract elements, the providing learning opportunities without danger. You can rehearse over and over again at no extra cost. You get powerful learning analytics for the teachers. You get visual feedback. You can see things which you cannot see otherwise in reality. And these unique affordances make virtual reality a great, unique, powerful learning tool. But when it's not designed properly, you will end up with an unsuccessful, ineffective learning experience. And then people are going to blame the technology. And it's not correct. You shouldn't blame the technology. You should blame the instructor who has not designed and guided in a proper way. And this is something which makes me kind of angry when I see a lot of too high hopes and too high enthusiasm on social media. I think we should be more critical, especially when you care about VR technology, you should be more critical and apply it as it's meant to be.
And I completely agree with that. Virtual reality is nothing without a good instructor. Thank you so, so much for sharing your vast VR knowledge with us. It's been an absolute honor to host you. Once again, this is the Pioneers in Learning podcast. Subscribe for more deep dives into the best of innovations in education.